Thank you. Good morning. Boy, I sure don't want to screw this up since Skipper invited me to be here, but thank you for having me. Skipper, I'm proud of you for serving 6 years on the board of HMA and just finishing 2 years as president. And Richard, I wish you great success coming in. And Linda, thanks for all that you do for this organization. It's great to be here. And you know, I thought what I would do instead of starting out with some boring thing, I thought sort of in a serene manner, it's 8:30 in the morning. People probably spent some time in the bar last night. I thought I'd give you just a few minutes, literally just about a minute to just breathe. There's a nice nature scene I'm going to show here. Not a lot of hardwood here. Maybe there is. Looks like some pine. But just listen to the birds and the water flowing and enjoy it and relax for 30 seconds or so. Just listen to the peace and quiet of that. So I'm going to flip the slide and again just listen to the peace and quiet of the birds and the water. I suspect that that was a very serene place, a place where 18 hours before I shot that video, five people died in a plane crash right there. It was a business jet that was on a flight from Nashville to Thompson, Georgia, a few years ago. And the pilots, it was this very airplane here, the pilots touched down long on a runway that wasn't horribly lengthy. The pilot decided to go around. Once he touched down, he did not retract the lift dumpers, and the lift dumpers are just exactly what the name implies. It's going to dump the lift. So if you don't have lift, you've basically turned an airplane into a lead sled. And they struck a utility pole right here. You can actually almost see the shadow of the utility pole in the satellite picture. They struck that utility pole with the left wing at 58 feet. The left wing sheared off here, and then they cartwheeled through this forest area and ended up here. And that's where they ended up. That's the left wing. What happened was when they were right on final approach, the pilot put the landing gear down, and that's when they got this annunciation that said that their anti-skid system had failed, basically an anti-lock system, anti-lock braking system. And it would cause what you should do, and what the pilot was trained to do, is refer to his emergency and abnormal procedures. And if he had done that, he would have seen that the required landing distance with the anti-skid system failed exceeded the landing distance of the airport he was trying to land on, and he would have just gone 30 miles, diverted 30 miles away and landed at Augusta, where the runway was a lot longer. But he didn't do that. And five people died. Amazingly, the pilot and the co-pilot survived that. I can't figure that out for the life of me, how they survived, if you've looked at that wreckage closely. That's all that was there. And that. You see cell phones scattered all around, shoes, things like that. What I've learned over the years, and I guess I've investigated, been involved in the investigation since I've been on the board, probably 150 transportation accidents. And what I've learned over the years is that accidents oftentimes are multi-causal. It's easy to look at something and say, well, the pilot screwed up, or the operator of this train should have done that, but he didn't. And that's oftentimes a factor in the accident. But if we look deep enough, we're going to find that many accidents, in fact, most of them, have organizational factors. For example, this was the first train wreck that I went to outside of Pittsburgh, New Brighton. A bunch of tank cars off the side of a bridge. And one of the things the NTSB found was Norfolk Southern's inadequate rail inspection and maintenance program. organizational issues. Now, Skipper, I've seen dogs do this before. I don't think I've ever seen a train do this. But what can I say? But anyway, the guy ran through a signal. He should have been operating at restricted speed. And we come to find out that, yeah, he screwed up. But Amtrak failed to ensure that the engineer had the competency to correctly interpret all the different signals that he would be operating across. So, again, an individual error. But yes, organizational issues as well. Fatal accident involving our subway system in Washington, D.C. All kinds of issues there. But when we dug down, the official NTSB report pointed out the lack of WMATA, Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authorities, the lack of their safety culture, and we'll talk about safety culture in a moment, but also we could trace it all the way back to the board of directors, the inadequate oversight of the WMATA Board of Directors. Two trains came together in Oklahoma at a combined speed of 90 miles an hour. Union Pacific failed to adhere to its policy. Yes, there were errors by the engineer of one of the trains, but UP was not following their own procedures. This was a case where a police helicopter was going to rescue a stranded hiker. And they crashed and killed the very person that they went out to rescue. And one of the things we found was that contributing to the accident was an organizational culture that prioritized safety or prioritized mission execution over safety. Beautiful airplane here being certified by Gulfstream, $65 million jet. It was in its test flight program. This accident killed their chief test pilot, killed four members of a test crew out in Roswell, New Mexico. And we found that Gulfstream's focus, contributing to the accident, was Gulfstream's focus on meeting the 650's planned certification date, which caused schedule-related pressures that were not adequately counterbalanced. This airplane was running behind on their certification, and they knew they had to get it certified by a certain date. And if they hadn't gotten it certified by then, they'd have to comply with a new set of rules. There was a lot of pressure in there to get this airplane certified. So, again, an organizational issue. You know, we said Gulfstream's focus on this, but the newspapers the very next day put a finer point on it. They said Gulfstream managers blamed for the fatal crash. Gulfstream's managers. So look at this. How would you like for the headlines to be written like this? That's a lot of kindling. If you don't like what you see here, you can change it. You are the leaders of the hardwood industry. You can change it. Because what Peter Drucker said, the best way to predict the future is to create it. You are standing right here at the brink of the future. If you don't like what you see, you can change it. So there's three things I'd like for you to think about. When you get on that airplane, Richard, don't do it as you're driving. I know you're driving back. But as you go home, think about these three questions. And then think about them next week. And then think about them in a month and see how you answer them. Three leadership questions. And we'll talk about each of these. How strong is your safety culture? Are we really living our values? And finally, are we fooling ourselves? So let's start with the first one. How strong is our safety culture? What is safety culture? It's a term that we toss around a lot. And this is a definition. There's a lot of definitions, but this is one that comes from the Nuclear Power, from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that I think is really well thought out. Safety culture is the core values and behaviors resulting from a collective commitment by the leaders and the individuals to emphasize safety over competing goals to ensure the protection of the people and the environment. Core values, we'll talk about that in just a moment. I like this statement here that talks about the collective commitment by the leaders and everyone involved. Not just the guy at the top, not just the guys on the safety committee, not just the guys on the front line, but a collective commitment by everyone involved. And where they emphasize safety over competing goals. What are competing goals in your industry? You know them better than I do. Profitability, production, you know what the competing goals are. You know those competing goals in your operation. So, yes, those are important. You've got to make money. There's nothing wrong with making money. That's capitalism. You've got to make money to stay in business. But we always want safety to have a seat at the table. So, think about this one. Don't answer it out loud. Just think about it. Do you have a good safety culture? And to sort of wake us up, Dr. Jim Reason, who's written a lot about organizational accidents, says it's worth pointing out that if you're convinced that your organization has a good safety culture, you're almost certainly mistaken. You see, he says a safety culture is something that is striving for rather than attained. And it's the process. It's the process that's more important than the product. So what does he mean by that? Well, first, I think he means that, yeah, we hope you have a good safety culture. But we don't want you to think that you're there. First of all, there is no there. It's a journey. But we want you to never get comfortable. As soon as you think you're there, you get complacent and something's going to bite you. So, and he says that the safety culture is something that is striving for but rarely attained. Again, it's the journey and not the ending point. When I took over a little Fortune 500 Fortune 500 company flight department, I said, I want us to be world class. And here's how I define world class. But you know, guys, the truth is we may never get there. But the very fact that we're reaching for it, that we're jumping for it each and every day, that in itself is going to make us better. And I think that's what Reason means here. It's the process, the fact that you're going through the motions each and every day, trying to be better. That's what really counts. Now, I say that safety culture starts at the top. And it has to permeate the entire organization. It has to start at the top. If it doesn't start with you, it's not going to work its way up. So it's triggered at the top and measured at the bottom. Again, starts at the top. Now, somewhere along the line, that message gets distorted. I've seen this in many cases where there'll be an accident. Like the Gulfstream folks. I know that their CEO would have wanted them to discontinue the flight test program and get things straight if he would have known that there were serious problems. But the people in between, in the middle, started distorting that safety message. So you might have some goals or values that look something like this, but people throughout the middle of this pyramid, and the reason it's shaped like this is to show the delta, the difference between the message at the top and the message at the bottom. That's why it's shaped like a delta there, to show that delta in values. Somewhere this message gets distorted, so by the time the people at the down here get the message, they've got something entirely different. And Skipper might want nothing more than safety. Guys, I don't want you to do it if you can't do it safely. And I really mean that. And I know he does mean that. But he may have somebody that says, I hear what Skipper's saying. He's a good man, and let me tell you what the man really wants. I've worked for him for 18 years, and here's what he really wants. He wants lumber coming out the tail end of this mill. And somebody is going to distort that message because they think they know what you really want. And so that brings up the word of the day, which is alignment. I visited the CEO and the senior VP and the executive VP of BNSF yesterday, and we talked about alignment. How do they ensure alignment through 40,000 employees? So that the message that they're sending truly is the message that's received on the front line. Alignment is where the leaders and the frontline employees and everybody in between share and practice the same values. Yes, there might be a delta, but it's not that big delta that we saw before. These people are going to kind of come up with their own idea, but we don't want there to be a huge disconnect. And so we want whatever's at the top to also be pretty close to the same message that's coming out at the bottom. One of our investigations, in fact, the subway accident that happened in Washington, D.C. that killed 9 people, in the report of that, the report said, the safety behaviors and attitudes of individuals are influenced by the people's perceptions and expectations about safety in their work environment, and they pattern their safety behavior to meet the demonstrated priorities, the priorities of the organizational leaders, regardless of stated policies. What does that mean? Let's translate that into English. People are going to watch you, and they're going to do what they think you really want other than what you're just saying. So if you're paying lip service to safety, they're going to watch you and figure out if you're really serious about that. We've seen this in many accidents. Metro North. Metro North is the probably the second largest commuter rail in the country. They operate in and out of Grand Central, going up into Connecticut and New York State, and even up into New Jersey. We were investigating 5 accidents involving Metro North over a 10-month period. Not a real good record. 2 of which were fatal. So one of the things that our investigators did is they put out a survey. They sent it out to 156 back, 25 from management, 131 back from labor. And, you know, it's one of these attitudinal sort of a surveys. And one of the questions was, Metro North management is committed to workplace safety and participates regularly in safety events. So how do you think management is going to respond to that?
We're absolutely.
Yeah. They're way over here. But what do you think is going to happen? You start working your way down, well, division management, there we go, and then you get down here. But by the time you get to the labor, look at the delta between those attitudes. And yet we put on the stand the head of Metro North. And I know that man did not want anything other than safety. But somehow that message got distorted between him and the front line. Another one. Management does not pressure staff to maintain service or operations, potentially at the cost of safety.
Oh, management, no, we never press anybody. No.
So it just shows how that disconnect can occur. In fact, we did find that safety was over, on-time performance was overemphasized in this operation. That had become even a metric of how the health of the system was going. They were measuring on-time performance to determine how well everything was working. They figured if we could be on time, then that means the rolling stock and the track maintenance and inspection and everything associated with it was operating well. So there was truly an overemphasis on production in that operation. Employee comments, you can read them. Metro North pays lip service to safety. On-time performance and budgets takes precedence over safety. The railroad only cares about on-time performance. And here's one here. It's all about on-time performance, and safety rules are thrown out the window to keep on-time performance. Management has no clue. In December, I attended a luncheon in New York City. The president, the CEO, actually, of Southwest Airlines was there. Southwest, of course, is the envy of all airlines. I would say that all airlines would like to be as profitable as Southwest and run a low-cost operation like that. And so maybe I don't get it, but the man did say, and this is one of their this is part of their vision. We aspire to be the most loved airline, the most flown airline, the most profitable airline in the world. And then somewhere in his interview, he said it again. And I turned to the person next to me and said, where's safety in that? Well, I forgot about it. And 6 days later, well, guess what? They ran an airplane off a taxiway in Nashville. Where's safety? Is everybody rushing around so much to try and get the job done? And then a few days later, somebody in a rush pushes an airplane into another airplane. Fortunately, nobody hurt. And then a few days after that, I see that Southwest Airlines settled a $2.5 million FAA fine. It was originally a $12 million fine, but through a negotiated settlement, they got it down to $2.5 million. So it really made me think. It's good to be the most loved, the most flown, and the most profitable. But when that's what you're sending the message to your employees, they're running around with their hair on fire, trying to do just that. So I said, I'm going to give the guy a break. I'm going to go on their webpage and see what their values was. And sure enough, safety was on there. It was. It was the 20th bullet point on a list of values. And it wasn't even a standalone item. It was safety and reliability. Folks, those two compete with each other. They're diametrically opposed. Safety is here. Reliability is here. On-time performance. Keep the airplanes going versus safety. You can't send the wrong message. You must make sure you're not sending the wrong message to your employees, even if you believe the right message. So what are values? Are we really living our values? Another one, don't answer out loud, but I ask people, is safety the top priority in your organization? And people will say, safety is our number one priority. And anytime I hear that, I just want to wave a bullshit flag. Because that's not your top priority. Your top priority is to be in business. But whenever I hear that, it's just worn out rhetoric that signals that they don't have a clue. Don't make safety a priority. Make it a core value. You see, priorities come and go. When I was at the airline, we changed presidents like people change diapers on children. You know, one of them, we changed them frequently. And when one of them would get full of crap, we'd take that one and get rid of it and put on a new one. And one guy would come in and say, man, our on-time performance is horrible. We've got to do something better about that. So for the next 18 months, everybody in the airline was focused on on-time performance. That guy would leave, take $35 million, and then the airline would go bankrupt. And that happened. Three guys got $35 million, and then the airline filed Chapter 11. But a new guy would come in and say, oh, my God, look at our financial performance. We've got to lower our cost. And then for the next year and a half or 2 years or 3 years, everything would be focused on lowering cost. And then that crisis would pass, and then somebody would say, you know, we're doing better now, but our customer service really is bad, so we've got to do better there. So priorities come and go, but your values, that's the fabric of your organization. That doesn't change. unless a lot of thought goes into it. So the question is, are you living your values? In a successful organization, everything that you do is run through those values. I look at it like a filter. Everything is run through those values to make sure that you're being true to those values, to make sure that you're really living those values. Shouldn't be a surprise here that in the early 60s, the Surgeon General came out and determined, guess what? Cigarette smoking can be bad for your health. I think everybody knows that. So you walk into a drugstore or pharmacy, and you see that they are your neighborhood health center. They're interested in what? Your health. And yet, you go to checkout, and what are they doing? They're selling cigarettes. WTF, they're in the health business. And they're selling cigarettes. What's that all about? It's about money. Maybe they're not living their values. Maybe they're not sincere about their values. So 2 years ago, February of 2 years ago, CVS said, we're going to quit tobacco sales. Cigarettes, chewing tobacco, all that kind of stuff. We're going to quit selling. Now, the pundit said, oh, they're going to lose $2 billion in revenue. But you know what? The CEO, when he announced this on YouTube, on their webpage, he said, the sale of tobacco products is inconsistent with our purpose, helping people on their path to better health. This is inconsistent with our values, with our stated purpose in life. And by the way, I just read in USA Today this morning that they're spending $50 million over the next 5 years to help people break out tobacco addiction and to help the younger generation. So that's what they did. Now, I read an article in Fox Business. It said, this move is clearly in line with their stated purpose and values, a move that we don't see often enough today in corporate America. Relying on a strong foundation of values is often what sets apart the market leaders from the pack. I don't think they're talking about a pack of cigarettes. And this article goes on to say, think of the values as the core guiding principles that act as the foundation of your organizations. These principles should guide you every decision and serve you in a fallback of uncertainty. And I've worked for organizations before that literally have the values, and they're not 22 of them. They're 5 or 6 or 7 that are literally like a bullet points, and that everything that you do, you run through just like a checklist. Is this going to interfere with our transparency? These are some of the NTSB values. We want to be transparent. If we do it this, how will that affect our transparency? How will it affect our independence? How will it affect our diversity? Just go through those values like a checklist. Now, we've all seen people that have values on their wall. Oh, yeah, these are our values. They're in their annual report. They're on their web page. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about actually living your values and letting them guide everything that you do. So, you know, people said they're going to lose $2 billion in revenue. So I went and checked the stock price. When they made that announcement, their stock was here. Last month, so about 2 years after the announcement, the stock was here. It went up 40%. Now, that 40% increase, they trade, their stock is traded on the New York Stock Exchange. The New York Stock Exchange decreased 6% during the same period of time. The Dow, during that same period of time, increased a scant 2%. They outperformed each of those. And you could say, well, Robert, the retail pharmacy business is booming. Well, they even outperformed their competition, which did not make that value-based decision. Now, the revenue loss, their revenue between this decision and a year later increased by over $12 billion. They lost two, but they increased by 12. up to $139 billion in revenue. And then their earnings were announced last month. They're up to $150 billion in revenue now. So sometimes if you do the right thing, you will be rewarded. And I want to read this because I wrote it down. I wanted to make sure I captured it right. I thought a lot about this. And I said, here's what I come up with. Organizations with strong leaders are those organizations that ensure their values are aligned and lived throughout the organization. They do the right things by caring for the safety and health of their employees and customers. And because of their commitment to values and caring, they have greater potential to perform well financially. And I believe that, and I think this is an example of that. And finally, I want you to ask yourself, are we fooling ourselves? The skipper came up for the Hardwood Federation meeting in September. It was the day before we had a board meeting on an event that occurred, a beautiful Gulfstream G4, owned by two wealthy individuals. And, you know, I looked at that operation, and they were really an impressive operation by all outward appearances. They had a full-time flight crew. Now, again, these were just two people that owned the airplane. And when you see that just individuals own an airplane, you oftentimes see a lot of movement. You know, maybe they hire contract pilots. They more, you know, do everything on the cheap. Well, the chief pilot had worked there for 27 years. The co-pilot, the other pilot, had worked there for 11 years. The flight attendant had worked there for 16 years. This is very unusual in this segment of aviation to see that type of stability. But they were there. They did everything on above standards, impeccable maintenance, high training standards, spent a lot of money on training. They went above standards. There's some accreditation standard that I wanted my flight department to have. And they had reached that. In fact, this accident occurred on a Saturday. They were going to have their third audit on Tuesday. And it takes 2 years between each stage. In each stage, you get higher and higher. It's a voluntary standard. And they were already on level two and going for level three. So going above standards, and very positive, very glowing positive comments from the auditor that did their audit 2 years ago. But I've got a good friend that says, you can fool the auditors, but never fool yourself. And fool themselves and fool the auditors they did. This flight crew ran a perfectly good airplane off the end of a runway and killed everybody on board. Everybody burned up. What happened? Well, on many airplanes, when you come to the gate, when you shut down engines, you engage a flight control lock so the wind doesn't blow the flight controls all around. And on this airplane, before you start engines, you're supposed to release the flight control lock. These guys didn't release the flight control lock. They're rolling down the runway. They get to the point where they're ready to lift off. They pull back, and the flight controls are locked. Control wheel can't even pull it back. So they spend about 13 seconds trying to troubleshoot it while they're accelerating about 2 or 3 knots a second. And then finally they reject, and then they not enough runway, and they go rolling off the end of the runway and end up across a riverbank. And just like that, they survived the collision. We know that because we saw that people were moving around, but they didn't get out of the airplane. What our investigation found is that, no, they didn't do any of the checklist that would have been the, you know, before start checklist, which says remove this gust lock. They didn't do any of the 5 recommended, the manufacturer specified checklist during taxi out and things like that to check the flight controls. And it had a recorder on board that recorded the last 175 flights. We found that they didn't do a full flight control check on any flight except for 2 out of the last 175 flights. Now, I suspect that I've forgotten things. In fact, I'm sure that along the way I've missed things. But I never intentionally didn't do a flight control check. They had just completely normalized the deviance. They got used to doing it this way. And they said, we don't need to do that. They had become too smug, too comfortable. I think they fool themselves. Got a good friend that says good can be bad. And he says that with good safety performance, people and organizations can easily become complacent. Don't ever believe that a lack of accidents means you're safe. And to counter this complacency, there must be a leadership obsession with continuous improvement. When I was running a little flight department, I'd wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning in a cold sweat thinking about something and said, oh my God, we can't let that happen in our department. And because I was obsessed with it, would wake up, if I could get back to sleep, whatever, when I'd get into the office that morning, I'd say, here's what I'm worried about. How are we going to deal with it? So are you on the right track? You may be on the right track, but Will Rogers said, even if you're on the right track, you'll get run over if you just sit there. So three things to think about. Think about it today. Think about it next week. And again, ask yourself these same questions around April 15th. How strong is your safety culture? Your values? Are you living them? And are you fooling yourselves? When I was young, I had a horse. And I was scared to death to get on that horse the very first time. Because I looked up at that horse, and he doesn't look that big here, but I think that horse must have been as tall as this room. And I told my mother, I said, Mom, I'm scared. I'm afraid. She said, why are you scared? And I said, Mom, I'm scared I'm going to get bucked off. I'm scared I'm going to fall off and hurt myself. And she said, don't be afraid. Why not? Why not, Mama? She said, well, the horse will know you're afraid. Well, that scared me even more. How's he going to know, Mama? How's the horse going to know I'm afraid? And she said, because he'll watch you. He'll watch the way that you act. He'll watch the things that you do. That's how he'll know. So, as it relates to safety, if you're just paying lip service to safety, your employees, you're not fooling them. They're going to know. They're going to know. And how do they know? Well, the same way this horse knew. Because they're going to watch you. They're going to watch the way that you act. They're going to watch the things that you do. That's how they'll know. Thank you very much.